Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for July 23rd, 2023, the 8th Sunday after Pentecost in year A. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. And Bruce, how are you?
I'm fine.
I did it all in one breath.
You did.
It sounded terrible. But I did it.
Good lung capacity, my friend.
The choir master will be happy.
That's right.
I'm ready for... for choir again. The 23rd of July. I know no kids listen to this podcast. Well, probably not. But if they are, I'd be sweating right now. School's right around the corner, man. Holy, and summer's almost over.
It's just not right.
But since it's mostly adults and parents and... it's probably the opposite. Oh, school's almost here.
That's true.
Summer's almost over.
No more childcare issues.
Right? Great. It's great. We've got one more Sunday here after this this coming Sunday in July, and then we will be in August, which these past couple of years has been even hotter than July.
Please don't say that.
But true.
You're true. Yeah, it's accurate.
But true. Do we have anything? Let me see here. The 23rd, we're still a little ways out from, our back to school schedule, that it's not quite time to promote that. Normally we would have a, game night coming up soon.
Yeah.
Since it butts up against a Gen Con evening, there's really no point to hold it.
Right.
Because all the people who run it will not be there. There will
and
be
a
Gen Con.
Probably a number of participants, too.
So we're gonna do it the week after Gen Con so that all of us can bring our new shiny board game toys.
Ooh.
Right? So.
Well, then what day will that be so people know when to come see the toys?
I believe that's the 10th of August. Let me take a quick double check. Nope, I'm wrong. It's the 11th.
Okay.
The 11th of August will be our game night coming up, so we still got some time to promote that, but if you want to see what's new and improved in the world of board games, competitive and co-op, the 11th is for you. Come on down and see what all we got.
It does sound interesting.
It is.
Of course, it's also one of those events that I enjoy just sitting in a coffee shop nearby and watching the costumes.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
The people watching is awesome.
If you have the chance to go to Gen Con, Saturday in particular,
yeah,
they do the parade of costumes in the late afternoon. I think it's like Neato. 5 o'clock. And it's everybody. Everybody who's dressed up goes and processes all the way around the convention center, which is massive, by the way.
Yeah.
It's so cool, though.
But no matter the costume, wear comfortable shoes.
Yes. Yes. Right? I think it's the largest event that the city holds.
I think it's between it and the NRA.
Well, I was thinking the race.
The race is bigger.
I forget
than
how
anything.
Many people the race holds, but I think it's about the same number of people.
I think the race holds more.
I was thinking that the race held 150,000 people, both in bleachers and in the infield.
I think it's more than that.
Is it more than that?
Yeah. Okay. But it may very well be that Gen Con brings in more people from out of town or out of state or something.
True.
Some stat like that.
True. Yeah, it is definitely. I think last year it was 147,000.
That's
people.
Cool.
So lots and lots. That's not what this podcast is about. I could make it that. Finding God.
I could go on forever, and I haven't even attended.
Welcome to our podcast, Finding God in Board Games.
and costumes.
Everyone gather together your victory points and your meeples, and let's get going. What do we want to? What do we have to promote for the church calendar here on the 23rd? Anything standing out? The book club still going on?
Check the website. We're hoping to have in late August a in-person gathering kids together to do a service project and food and things like that.
Yeah.
We're just trying to nail down a date.
Okay.
And similarly, a movie night for adults as part of our movies with a social justice perspective.
Okay.
That we have the movie picked out, but again, don't have the date yet. Trying to see when people are coming back from traveling and stuff like that.
Gotcha. And I applaud you for phrasing it properly. Movie nights for adults instead of an adult movie night.
Yeah.
I'm no rookie.
I only point it out so that I can laugh about it. well, let's move on to this day in church history. I keep calling it church history, but really it's Christian history.
But only Christians have churches.
I suppose that's
true. Yeah, so I suppose that's true. You're okay.
Welcome to the educational content, as opposed to the, you know,
silliness,
the silliness and hypocrisy of the later half of it. In our first entry comes from either 75 or 78. It's kind of wild that there is a potential 3-year gap, but it's on this date. I'm fascinated.
Interesting.
By this. Yes, the martyrdom of Apollinaris, Bishop of Ravenna, said to have been a disciple of Saint Peter.
Huh. What's his name?
Apollinaris. A-P-O-L-L-I-N-A-R-I-S. Apollinaris.
Can't say that I know that name well.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know it off the top of my head either. The authority from the date comes from the book The New Schaff-Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge. I don't know. But I do, like I said, I do find that entry fascinating, that it's like, oh, it's definitely on this date, either in 75 AD or 78 AD.
But this date.
Yeah. But this date.
Yeah.
Like, usually it's like, it's this year, but like,
mm-hmm.
we think it's this day, but, you know.
This era.
Right, exactly. Somewhere in this, like a 4-month period, probably. We knew it was the fall. Things like that. But, so anyways, that's interesting. 685, we see John V is consecrated as Pope. An Easterner, he is consecrated without the usual direct approval of the Byzantine Emperor.
So. Huh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You would think the Byzantine Emperor would approve an Easterner. Yeah.
I don't know. 1184. How do you say this French name? Fontevrault. Sure. Fontevrault Abbey, France, receives a papal bull of privileges, permitting its women a good deal of autonomy without supervision by men.
What year?
1184.
Okay, I'm just going to say it. I may be totally wrong, but I wonder if that set the table for France wanting a different pope later.
So, I'm not sure exactly how this is. The authority of the date comes from, I believe, the way that this is called, the way this is listed, is the book is called Pope by Joan Morris, and I think then the chapter, I think that's how it's running, is called The Lady Was a Bishop.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. I think that's how their references are working.
And within monastic or tradition, which includes men and women,
mm-hmm.
particularly in that era, and in some places in this era as well, the head of the monastery, who we often are used to saying Mother Superior or Father Abbot,
mm-hmm.
have the status of a bishop.
Oh, okay.
They don't necessarily have that title, but they have that status. So that's been called upon as we work through the dynamics around women's ordination,
mm-hmm.
as to how many women in canonical leadership have existed through Christian time, mainly out of the convents.
Yeah. It's been a little while since we've addressed it, but a papal bull is not an animal. sent to like a village.
Right.
What's that? What's that mooing sound? Oh, it's a bull from the Pope.
Run away.
I wonder where that word comes from, a bull.
I think it's Latin, but okay. I'm not positive.
That'd be interesting. I wonder where... you know what? I have this fancy thing called Google.
Yeah.
Bull word origin. Kind of curious. Etymology. And, oh, it's Norse.
Ooh, I love it.
All right. Well, whatever.
You sure? It's
whatever cool. This etymology comes from, it's not tying into. It's not tying into
church stuff.
Church stuff. Okay. No, we go economics, but okay. Not church. One who buys securities or commodities in expectation of a price rise, as opposed to a bear.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I'm not. Maybe if I add the word papal in front of it, isn't this fascinating radio? Oh, the name is derived from the lead seal or bulla, traditionally affixed to such documents. Okay.
Yeah, so you couldn't open it up, change what it says, and say, yeah, the Pope handed this to me.
Well, why don't I just call it a bulla?
That's a good question.
I mean...
Well, humans typically shorten words
mm.
across languages.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
In fact, that's one of the ways that linguists often date documents is which ones are using shorter versions of a given word.
I mean, just, you know, earlier today, instead of saying your name is Bruce, I just called you B.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Well, B, let's move
on. Well, better though. Yeah, you are commonly addressed as Ben.
That's true. That's true.
Opposed to Mr. Payton. Or Benjamin.
That's true. So would the shortening of your name be Brew?
It has been.
Really?
Yeah. Even without the presence of a mug in front of me.
I am not comfortable with that. So Bruce, let's move on. 1373, the death in Rome of Bridget of Sweden. Just Bridget. Just one. There's only one. A Scandinavian mystic and founder of the Brigantine Order.
Yeah.
She had written several books of revelations.
Uh-huh.
So, Bridget of Sweden.
She's cool. She's well worth looking up.
Interesting. Okay.
I believe she also...
This is the Scandinavian side of you.
Yeah,
talking,
it is. It's big today.
If she would have been a Seventh-day Adventist, you would have been...
But in seriousness, some of her works have been set to music and are quite beautiful.
Oh, interesting. Cool. 1584, we see the death of John Day in London, the foremost English printer of the Elizabethan era. He had introduced Roman type to replace Gothic fonts.
Much easier to read.
Good on him. Because he had printed devotional books.
Don't say for... devil.
I was thinking devolution. I don't know why. Devotional books for the Reformation and continued to print Protestant books after the accession of Mary Tudor. He was imprisoned and then exiled. When Protestants regained power under Elizabeth, he returned and printed John Fox's Acts and Monuments, and then in parentheses, the Book of Martyrs.
Yeah, that's how most people know it. who know it?
Yeah, I did not.
And one of the major fights... through the centuries, as far as I know, no one was burned at the stake over them, has been the what we now call the font of hymnals and prayer books.
Really?
Yeah. Just huge debates about what is a devout-looking typeface.
Right.
What's readable.
Yeah, the one you backed is abhorrent. How could I possibly get close to God with this font? Shame, I say. I do like this, though, since we've talked a little bit about the authority for the date coming from a book. This one comes from standard encyclopedias.
That's a little overconfident.
Yeah, which is kind of the website's snobby way of everybody knows this.
Yes.
1702, the Camisards, French Protestants of... Languedoc break into open revolt when they hear a rumor that a priest at Pont de Montvert intends to execute, oh my gosh, some of his Camisard prisoners whom he has held and tortured. They burn his house, kill him, and liberate the prisoners. This begins a savage war that leads to their extermination.
Wow. Those French.
I know, right?
I mean, that sounds almost English.
I would guess that. Well, I was actually, that's true. I was actually sitting here thinking, like, this would make a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it
would. Interesting. But boy, does that story have everything. A revolt, a priest trying to kill people that he's tortured and intends to execute, an extraction plan and a liberation leading to the complete annihilation of a group of people. I mean, that's an Oscar.
I was going to say, it sounds like, you know, Star Wars 15. We're out of plots. Wait, we just heard this on a podcast.
Right.
It will totally fly.
A Sith priest is holding the...
Yeah.
Don't give Kathleen Kennedy any ideas. We don't need that. We need different things. We need different things now. 1843, the baptism in Calcutta of Bengali convert Lal Bihari Day, who will become an ordained pastor, missionary, and educator. He will author Bengal Peasant Life, a novel, and Bengali folk tales.
Interesting.
Yeah. So some.
I'm not intrigued by the religious aspect, but I'm intrigued by the books he wrote.
Hey,
those sound like they'd be fascinating.
They would be fascinating, especially the folk tales. I love a good folk tale.
Yeah. Again, more Star Wars.
Right. Exactly. here's a Baptist entry for the day. 1957, Nigerian church planter Joseph Adameo Taiwo is honored with the title of chieftain. Through his zealous efforts, he enlarged the Baptist presence in Nigeria. And then finally, we see 1993, Demos Shakarian. Yeah, that's right. Demos Shakarian dies in Costa Mesa, California. Of Armenian origin, he had founded the Full Gospel Business Men's Fellowship International. Wow, that's a mouthful. Full Gospel Business Men's Fellowship International.
Yeah, you got it.
Or the FGBMFI.
What year did he die?
1993.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd come across that in Southern California.
Okay.
Where I started my ordained ministry in Southern California in 1985, so I'm sure I got junk mail saying, help your men find Jesus.
Help the figabumifa. Full Gospel Business Men's Fellowship International. So the Full Gospel is... what they're about.
Well, you got Full Gospel Fellowship is what they're about, with this effort
coming focused from on businessmen, and it is an international group.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. Full Gospel Fellowship. What would a Full Gospel Fellowship be, out of curiosity?
That's a whole lot of people wanting to burn each other at the stake. Oh, I'm Full Gospel.
It's the Full Gospel or nothing.
It was one of the, the evangelical movement isn't too old. And it was one of the expressions of conservative evangelical Christianity that we believe in the Full Gospel. And just to use an example right in front of me, the Episcopal Church ain't even close to Full Gospel because they don't do full immersion baptisms.
Gotcha.
Don't take the Bible literally. Don't take the gospel literally.
Gotcha. So this is fundamentalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And part of fundamentalism through the late 20th century and now is going full bore is we gain control of the principal power centers in the society.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can put God in charge. So... we see that in the legal system right now, and that was started in the 90s with Full Gospel style law schools.
Gotcha.
That and medical schools, which have produced doctors who are willing to say, no, abortion is always unhealthful, even though that's not true.
Gotcha.
And it goes on to other professions, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they have the moniker of doctor, the yeah. title of doctor. Yeah, so
a lot of credibility, you know, there.
Hey, now 3 out of 10 say this, yeah. as opposed to one.
And they approve of smoking.
You know, they weren't always the best.
Only as a weight loss technique.
That's definitely not a good tooth whitener. Right. All right. Well, then that's it. Those are our entries for this day in church history.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, a bunch of interesting ones. I am, just in case anybody is curious about it, I am, I've already written, while we were sitting here, I've written up a treatment for the Commissars movie. So don't bother. Don't bother.
It's mine. Copyrighted already.
It's mine. Sending email now. But if anybody wants to talk to me about it, I'm happy to make a pitch. Anybody but Warner Brothers. You know what I mean? Just
you're Warner Brotherist.
I don't like what they did to DC, the poor guys. Anyways, moving on. Our first reading from for the day comes from the book of Isaiah.
I just gotta say, worst church fundraising effort ever. Producing screenplays.
It does have a tendency to just flush money down.
Yes. And time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm a terrible writer. So there's that. Our first reading from the day comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 44, verses 6 through 8. Very long reading. So buckle up. Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. Who is like me? Let them proclaim it. Let them declare and set it forth before me. Who has announced from of old the things to come? Let them tell us what is yet to be. Do not fear or be afraid. Have I not told you from of old and declared it? You are my witnesses. Is there any God beside me? There is no other rock. I know not one. Isaiah 44 would be second Isaiah, mm-hmm. right?
I'm almost sure.
What was that?
I'm almost sure.
Almost sure?
I am double checking. If you don't hear anything more from me, it is.
Okay. In a way, it kind of feels like it.
Yeah, it does.
In the middle of captivity, because this is... correct me if I'm wrong, but this kind of seems like a, hey, I know you've gotten kind of integrated into this society and they have their own gods and worship and, you know, yada, yada, but,
yada, yada, Hebrew.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. The Lord, and I love that he gets his titles, the Lord, King of Hosts. And his Redeemer, the Lord of, or King of Israel, his Redeemer, the Lord of Hosts, says, I am the first, and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. So it kind of seems like it's this reminder of, like, hey.
It's a callback.
Right. Yeah. 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 One and only. Don't forget. I know you're kind of settling in here, but don't worship these other gods.
Right.
Don't become Babylonian. Remember where you came from, remember who you are, and remember that this ain't right.
Well, yeah, and not just it ain't right, but even though it's a quick fix, it will do you no good in the long run.
Right, right. And then there's kind of like this, there's kind of this challenge. Who is like me? You know, if you're like me, go ahead and speak up. Anyone? I'll wait.
Yeah.
Declare and set it forth before me. Who has announced from of old the things to come? Let them tell us what is yet to be. I'm kind of curious what that specifically is referenced. If there's anything specific that references. Like, did God, like, is Isaiah having God say, like, remember that time I, you know, called my shot and I Babe Ruthed it and... and nobody believed me, but it became true. Anybody else done that recently? Have you, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, what might it be referring back to?
Well, it doesn't refer back to chapter and verse.
Sure.
But it does refer back to everything.
Gotcha.
Of the Hebrew scriptures and more. Of Moses saying, well, what's your name? I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I
you am. Are what?
Yeah.
I am hungry. I am tired. I'm a little cranky. How are you?
And then following the where this reading leaves off, verse 9, it's, numerous paragraphs describing how useless idols are. And that they cost a lot. People put a lot of effort into building them. People attribute lots of power to them. And they're just dumb rocks.
Right. Yeah.
So we get that line, but then it goes on to, into very specifics about people setting up shrines and using these materials and those materials. And it doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I can kind of see in verse 7. So this really is about worship and idol, idolatry and that kind of thing. But I can see in verse 7, to circle back on it, who has announced from of old the things to come? It wouldn't be hard for the Israelites to think of a quick list. You know what I mean? Like, you know, oh, yeah, you said you were going to deliver us from Egypt. You did. You said you would give us the promised land. You did. But I can also kind of understand, like, there's a little bit of, you know, did God say that we were going to be taken into captivity, though, by the Babylonians? Was that a, was that a promise? Was that a call? Or is that just something like, do these people feel a little blindsided because, like, hey, you did. You actually did announce what was going to happen, and we didn't hear any of this. Like, there was a little bit of, I'm trying to remember which.
Well, both Jeremiah and Isaiah foretold.
Did they? Okay. Yeah. Saw stuff on the horizon.
A couple weeks ago, we had the thing of the false prophet that
Jeremiah
had to tell, say, and by the way, you're going to die.
That was pre.
That was 3 weeks ago.
That was pre Babylonian capture.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that does kind of color what I was about to say a little bit. But like, you know, so I guess there was like a, and I told you this was going to happen. It's all, to quote a more modern phrase, it's all part of the plan.
Well, no, that's not really what he's saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's where I wanted to go with that.
Yeah, because the translation makes it seem that way. But a better translation of the Hebrew, instead of saying who has announced from old the things to come, would be who has announced from my placing an eternal people and things to come. I mean, I'm not quite sure when that eternal people phrase starts. But it's... In the Hebrew, it's, you guys are number one.
Yeah.
I keep telling you that.
Yeah.
And you keep acting like you've forsaken us. No.
Right. And that's really there in verse 8. Don't fear. Don't be afraid. I told you the whole time.
Yeah.
You are my witnesses.
And I have a feeling this is a Christian translation hitting us in the face of, we want to make sure all the readers can say that's them. Instead of really what this is saying is the Jewish people, they are the chosen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And as Paul put it, we're just grafted on.
Right. The tree imagery of Paul. Lovely. But yeah, this is, as you pointed out, it's not that like, hey, this is part of the plan. There was a little bit of like, I did tell you this was going to happen.
There was warnings.
Yeah, there were warnings.
It didn't say, only occasionally it'd say, this is happening because I wanted to. Right. Most of the time, it was, this is the natural consequence
right.
of you guys being jerks.
Right. And it's a reminder of, like, even though bad things are happening to you, I'm not gone. Right. I'm not leaving. I haven't abandoned you.
You're still number one.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know it doesn't feel it like right now.
Many a Jewish comedian has said, if this is how you treat your friends.
Right? Yep. Better to be a friend than an enemy then.
Yeah.
Anything else about these three verses?
I'll say it for the umpteenth time of these podcasts. Do take the time to read verse 9 and following, because it's a really wonderful writing that is satirical.
Mm.
And when we think of the Bible as being overly serious, these are a set of verses to read humorously.
Okay.
Because it's making fun of the idol builders.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Throwing shade on them, as the kids say.
Right, right, right.
Or at least used to.
You do kind of get the lead up, too. Is there any God besides me? There is no other rock.
Yeah.
I know not one.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Let's move on to our psalm reading for the day. Psalm chapter 86, verses 11 through 17. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart to revere your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart, and I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me. You have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. O God, the insolent rise up against me. A band of ruffians seeks my life, and they do not set you before them. But you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Turn to me and be gracious to me. Give your strength to your servant. Save the child of your serving girl. Show me a sign of your favor so that those who hate me may see it and be put to shame, because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. What do we know about this psalm? This is one of those more personal, individual prayer.
Yeah, and ones. So it's harder to nail down its era and things like that. It's, as you said, it's an individual psalm by someone who sees themselves as God's servant,
mm-hmm.
and thinks that should include an answer from God occasionally. Maybe even a little overly proud about being a servant, but maybe I'm nitpicky.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the servant aspect of it in 16. If we think that the author is the child of a serving girl, if the author is the serving girl and has a child. Is there any, or is this a metaphorical serving girl that the person is putting themselves in their shoes of somehow?
Well, there's no reason not to think it's someone who was born to a woman who was a servant and therefore doesn't have a lot of status in society.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not indicate the gender of the author,
mm-hmm.
Or what their own status is, besides what we can presume that probably they're not so high up either.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure.
And maybe the most meaningful work they could get was a servant in the temple.
Okay. Okay. We have another example of a very English translated word. So I'm curious to know the actual word. In verse 14, ruffians is just about as English as you can get.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know what band of group is the author actually talking about?
Beatles. Okay. What verse is it?
It is in verse 14.
Okay. I'll just speed me up a second here. 12, 13. Violent men and a mob.
Okay. Okay. So Ruffians isn't that bad. I mean, it is.
It kind of cleans it up.
Yeah. It yeah. Yeah. That English word pretty much does describe that. Hooligans.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
the riffraff.
I think I've been better to be more literal, because so often English translations clean up the Bible mm-hmm. so that it doesn't have the oomph that it should.
Mm-hmm.
Band of ruffians, whereas a violent mob. Oh, yeah. I know what that looks like.
Yeah, right, exactly. Which really does then kind of, you know, indicate like, yeah, they really do then potentially seek harm against me.
Definitely.
Like,
they don't get described as violent unless they do violence on people.
Right, exactly. And it really kind of does carry like a, you know, ruffians could be like, they're just, you know, boys out on the town, yeah. a little too much to drink.
Shouting at cars.
Giving into their, you know, baser instincts and should have chosen better but didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Violent mob. Uh-oh. Oh, no. That seems like a sober lot.
Yeah. And perhaps with weaponry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so that was that. I had one other thing I was going to ask, and now I don't remember what it was. Sheol, just so that we could cover that base. I know it doesn't come up too regularly. We've explained it several times over the years, but it delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. What is Sheol? Since it's
well, the
lost to modern Christianity as to what right. that necessarily means.
Because it's been so abused. It's the land of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And in Hebrew is often used poetically rather than not meant to, rather than literally.
Sure, right.
So, like in this case, what a lot of commentary say is that this is poetically describing someone whose spirit was dead until God rescued them.
Gotcha. Right.
Rather than, oh, you pulled me out of hell.
Right. You know, saving me from, you yeah. know, this yeah. is, this is, yes. Saving me from the pit of despair.
Well, say, you know, the Christian might say saving me from eternal punishment.
Right.
And this is much closer to saving me from a really unhappy life.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, of constantly being a victim of depression. And
right.
Which I take very seriously. So I'm not saying that lightly, but
yeah,
it's not the same as eternal damnation.
Yeah. 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 No, this isn't like the, snuggling up to like the fire and brimstone side of like,
no.
you're like, oh yeah, vanquish the evil one and,
right.
and make me a angelic warrior in your, you know, army of the eternal. Yeah. Calm down. Calm down.
Right. And it sets the pace for the rest of the psalm, which is much more full of hope.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it, is what's the context of this use of Sheol? It's that in everyday life, God steps next to us in dealing with the ruffians.
Right.
And gives us the example of being slow to anger and steadfast in love and faithfulness.
Right.
So, yeah, it's this use of Sheol would make no sense, really, if it was talking about eternal damnation.
Sure.
It's
yeah,
really
no.
really talking about how hard everyday life is.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think it's interesting as far as prayers go. There's discussion that can be had. I think it would automatically have a little hint of judgment if we were to have it. But I'm going to throw it out there just in case.
Sure.
It's interesting that the author is praying for like a sign, favor, here, at the very least, at the end of what we read. I don't know if the psalm actually resolves any further. Show me a sign of your favor. Yeah, so, but so that those who hate me may see it and be put to shame because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. So it's kind of an interesting thing of like, you know, it's not it's not really like, hey, let's, you know, let's get them to stop this bad behavior. It's a little bit more of like, hey, how about you give them a sign that they're just, you know, terrible people. you know what I mean? Like, why don't we lift me? I'll be happy to be the vessel for this. Why don't we just lift me up and maybe elevate me a little bit so that other people can be like, well, geez, you know, God is with this person. And so therefore I must be bad.
that's pretty close to what this is trying to say. Right. You know, a little less, for lack of a better term, just using shorthand, egotistical than that, but closer to the best, you know, the best revenge is living well. So God, show these people that I'm living well.
Yeah.
And that it's part of there. I'm looking at in front of me, a mid-century, as in 20th century commentary that describes this psalm as the problem of trouble.
I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of archaic in a wonderful way.
Yeah.
And the commentary goes on to talk about how, as, and this is a Christian commentary, that as Christians, particularly in the 20th century, there was a strong sense that if you were a faithful Christian, you'd have no trouble in your life. And so this psalm, in part, addresses that in the context of 2,500 years ago of people then too saying, well, you know, if you really were faithful to God, your crops would be fruitful and you'd rise above being the child of a servant girl.
Right.
But instead it's, no, life is going to be full of trouble, but God will be with you every step of the way.
Right.
And so the very sort of humble request of God is just let him know that you're with me.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, whatever small way that may happen, that, you know, like in some movies that have friendly supernatural stuff, you know, that the waiter spills a beer in their lap or just something small.
Right.
I'm getting too much into movie scripts tonight. But yeah, it's a very humble request, but sincerely asked.
Yeah. And I suppose that the my thought on it had been, it is maybe colored by the phrase put to shame. Like my head immediately went to like, oh, like a public embarrassment. Okay. And really, I see what you're saying. Like it really could be more of like a, just enough so that if somebody hates me, they feel bad about it.
Maybe you know what I mean? Not that far.
Maybe, like, you know, just feeling a little bit of shame of like, God, I hate that. Yeah. I really shouldn't do that. That's not fair. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I, it's not, you're right. It's not as egotistical as I first read it. You know, at least maybe not.
I think it would be more like, let them be mystified that I'm not unhappy and in tears.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, and that, and what's interesting, because this was written in Hebrew, is the last word of the psalm is ashamed. Or will be ashamed, technically. So, okay, that gives a little more emphasis than I was saying.
Yeah.
The writer of the psalm does want to have the last word.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So forget what I said for 20 minutes. Does want public shaming, but doesn't expect them to be punished.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Anything else about this film?
No.
Okay. Let's move on to our Matthew reading. Matthew chapter 13, still in 13, 24 through 30, and then 36 through 43. Guess what? We get a parable. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. But while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from? He answered, an enemy has done this. The slave said to him, then do you want us to go and gather them? But he replied, no, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest, and at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, collect the weeds first, bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples approached him, saying, explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field. He answered, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom and all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen. So just like last week, we have another parable which gets an explanation, although in this one, I don't know if this immediately follows last week's reading. I don't know if Jesus gave his disciples a side eye the first time that he explained it when the crowds were there, which caused the disciples then for this next parable to go, we'll wait and ask when no one else is around. We'll wait when we're alone. There is that difference, which is kind of an interesting difference of like, there was a public, hey, we don't get it, explain it to us. And then he explains it to him. And then he immediately tells another parable and the disciples wait.
Yeah.
Until the crowds are gone and they're like, oh, okay, about that one. Didn't get that one either. What's up?
Yeah.
But we do skip five verses. What do we skip there in the middle? What's 31 through 35?
It is the parable of the mustard seed.
Okay, so he tells two parables.
Yeah.
And then the disciples go, mustard seed, got it. It's parable of the sower, don't get it. What's up?
And actually, I just want to make sure I'm right on this. He actually tells two more parables.
In five verses?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Tiny ones.
Tiny mustard seed size ones?
Yeah. One's the mustard seed, so that takes two verses. And the next one is the parable of the leaven of the yeast.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that takes one verse.
Gotcha. So maybe the disciples were more like, those other quick stories, I don't even remember. But I do remember the parable of the sower. What? What's weird? So let me start with this question. Parables, as we've said before, always have some sort of a twist. I'm not familiar enough with harvesting or sowing to necessarily pick out what in this parable makes a crowd go, huh? Is there a thing that super stands out?
People have been wondering how to parabolize this.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ways is, one approach is to say, no, people would pull the weeds. It ain't that hard.
Okay.
And
because that seemed kind of a logical solution. Like, yeah. Just let them grow.
Yeah. And particularly with water being so scarce. And composted soil being so scarce, you really don't want waste those resources on a weed.
Gotcha.
So that's the one I like the best as to how is this a parable.
That makes sense. I suppose one could make the argument of like, when have you ever seen an enemy come into your crop field and sow weeds?
Yeah.
If he's there,
he'll just burn the whole thing.
He'll burn it, kill you.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, it's silly.
This is the dumbest Snidely Whiplash plot I've ever heard in my life.
Just wait for four more months.
I'm gonna sow thistle seeds. Just like, what?
They'll have yellow finches coming out of their ears.
They won't know what to do. Oh, the calamity. But I suppose the other aspect that I kind of wondered about as it being parabolized was like, is it hard to separate weeds from the wheat? I mean, maybe that's the thing. Like, if you let them both grow, you'd never be able to fully separate them. That'd be a nightmare. I mean,
yeah, it's, I don't know. And it's one of these, this is one of these places where scripture commentators get into the weeds.
I see what you did there.
Seriously, folks. And try to come up literally with weeds that look like wheat.
Mm.
And yeah, it's, they're just trying to stretch this to make it work literally.
Yeah.
When we know that was never, ever a concern of Christ. And that it makes more sense to picture weeds that could be removed with a lot of labor.
Mm-hmm.
And yet but Jesus is saying you really don't have to burn people for heresy.
Mm.
That gets taken care of later.
Yeah.
If it needs to be taken care of at all.
Yeah. 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 I was going to say, speaking of the his explanation of the parable, first of all, to me, it's kind of funny just because it goes on longer than like you would really think.
Yeah.
You know, the one who sows is the good seed. The good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the children. The weeds are the other children. The enemy who sowed them, that's the devil. The harvest is the end of age. The reapers! The rain! Is like, you know what I mean? Like, no. Just like, okay. Like, there are a lot of actors in here. But his explanation of this parable is a little bit more, like, does kind of fit that, you know, fundamentalism,
if
fire and brimstone, you know, the angels battling on earth kind of a mentality. It does kind of
fit this. And that works if we pull out verses we want to.
Mm.
Because the major thing that Jesus is saying here is you don't get to decide who's wheat, who's weeds, when to burn them. All of that is up to God. And in other places, Jesus will basically talk about ain't no one burning. But more importantly, it's easy to imagine the apostles going, I know in that last village, the dude who needs to be weeded out.
Yeah.
Because he just always asks the difficult questions that pulls the sermon off track. And here Jesus is saying, nope. You don't get to cull your congregation.
Right, right.
There's no insiders. There are no outsiders here.
Okay, okay. I mean, it does have, though.
They get to grow together until all this ends.
Yeah, yeah. This does have the translative children of the evil one, the devil being translated here. Is there any nuance to that as far, because I mean, again, we've said it many times, devil in quotation marks, not really a Bible thing. It came
right
in kind of later,
right? Medieval times,
right?
This would be more devil as mischief maker, which does make sense. You know, you had a little vandal out there in the fields,
right? Right,
planting weeds.
Yeah, that really would be like that's a much better way to view it as far as like when you're sitting there like, what kind of enemy would do this? I don't know, Loki would.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you are.
But why? But why? Because he can't help himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a plan. He's just like, woo.
Okay.
Crazy.
That's one of the best descriptions of Satan that I've heard.
Why would you do this, Satan? Why not?
It's who I am.
The inexplicable is my playground.
And there are fewer, and that, to me, that's very strategic, mm-hmm. because nothing drives humans crazier than chaos and a lack of a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Things not making sense.
Yeah.
No, you're not wrong.
So Jesus tosses a bone of saying, yeah, okay, here's, you want to know why your congregation is a bunch of muttering, crazy people? It's because that's how things are.
Yeah.
It's how things have always been. It's how things always will be until time ends.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really think about it until you talked about it. Unlike last week's sowing parable,
mm-hmm.
where essentially you're the sower, so you do have a part to play.
Yeah.
You don't have a part to control, but you do have a part to play. This one, you're there. Like you're not really, there's not a call to action,
right?
There's, in a way, there's a call to inaction.
Exactly.
This is a call to like, don't worry your pretty little heads over this.
Chill.
You're not in control. That's what you need to understand. You are not in control. So the thing that you're trying to control is beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
So just give up and stop.
Yeah.
Which is not really motivational.
Yeah. And too often it's seen as motivational.
Right, right, right.
But it is literally the opposite of the meaning.
Right, yeah. Because, I can definitely see people going, well, we, you know, as the good seed, we need to combat the weeds. And so this is Jesus clearly calling to arms. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, like, yeah.
Wheat doesn't fight.
Yeah.
Where in this analogy do you see like, yeah, let's arm the wheat. Let's arm the wheat so that it can tie a bottle of Roundup to each the base of each wheat plant so that it can fight the weeds.
Yeah, it's more, and it's much more about, you know, if one needs to turn it from a parable into an analogy,
mm-hmm.
it's much more about making sure the wheat is strong.
Yeah.
That's really the only thing that we have a chance of. And there's no sure success there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't get rid of the weeds. It's not for you to harvest them. That's not what this one's about.
Yeah. And in a way, one of the other ways to read this is from Jesus' perspective of these people are complaining about this lack of control.
Yeah.
And you kind of see Jesus going, how do you think I feel?
I was going to say, you ain't seen nothing yet.
I want all of you to be wheat. You're not.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about that.
Looking at you, Judas.
Right? So we're just going to let you all grow. We'll collect you later.
Yep.
And that'll be that. I would love to just make you all good wheat.
And, I said Judas, but one of the things in the Bible is most of the apostles, we don't know what happened to them after the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Tradition filled in the blanks and as assigned dubiously different regions of the earth that apostles went to.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But very low description of that at that time. And so it's possible that only half the apostles tops were wheat.
Yeah.
And you know, it's it's something we don't want to think about because it's a bigger challenge to us about how difficult it might be to be wheat.
Right. Yeah. Boy, isn't that true? Well, we'd better leave it.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. I nailed it.
Been waiting an hour to do that.
Nope. Actually, that one just came to me.
Very good.
We'll call an end to this, your podcast for July 23rd, 2023, the eighth Sunday after Pentecost in year A. And as always, we invite your thoughts, your feedback. Email us at shortcut@hfec.org. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions or comments that you might have. Come worship with us this coming week.
You bet.
However, that works for you at 8 and 10 o'clock in person. Our 10 o'clock service will be on our YouTube channel, HFEC Videos. And until next week, I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.